Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Learning businesses need to consistently perform on three fronts: reaching the right people, generating revenue to sustain their work, and demonstrating real impact.
In our last episode, we began the process of revisiting reach, revenue, and impact, starting with reach. In this episode, we continue with revenue.
For learning businesses, even nonprofit ones, revenue is essential. Without revenue, no learning business can do its fundamental work of helping individuals improve through education and learning, thereby benefiting society at large.
Although we're focusing on revenue in this episode, we can't leave reach and impact completely out of the discussion. Without sufficient reach, revenue has a cap. And without sufficient impact, revenue is unlikely to be sustainable.
So maybe we should turn to why right now revenue is, we feel, clearly top of mind for organizations in the Leading Learning audience.
One clear indicator is our annual survey data. So we conducted a survey in the last quarter of 2025. And in that data, revenue was a top strategic goal. Increasing revenue was a top strategic goal, either the number one or number two strategic goal from the majority of respondents.
Right. Put together number one and number two, and more than half said that increasing revenue was their top strategic priority. And then we heard about related issues as well. So capacity constraints really stood out in the data. And of course, capacity is often tied to revenue. If there isn't sufficient revenue, then you aren't able to have the capacity. You can't hire the people you need, whether it's a staff or contractor or consultant. The revenue just isn't there to support it.
If the revenue's not there, you also can't necessarily invest in developing the staff that
Right.
you do have as well. And then I think another reason that we know that revenue is clearly top of mind is because of increased competition. And that increased competition is not only from learning providers. There definitely are even more learning providers now than, you know, a decade ago. But there's also just the competition for attention and time. And we talked about this a little bit in our last episode. But just the fact that you have to compete, not just with other learning offerings, but just with everything that any individual has to get done, you have to compete for their attention and time if they're going to come and learn with your organization.
Right. And a big result of this is that many organizations are seeing their revenue flatline or even decrease as a result of the environment that they're working in now. And I think we've noted before, this is 2025 was the first year we heard seriously from CEOs of particularly trade and professional associations the question of whether they should actually be in the education business because they were finding revenue to be such a challenging issue for them.
So clearly top of mind, this need for revenue. And we also want to say up front that this really is a need for revenue. I mean, revenue is how learning businesses become and remain sustainable. You know, so this is not necessarily about being profit hungry or greedy. This is about making sure that you are bringing in the revenue you need to do the good work that you're doing.
That's right. We're not trying to be Gordon Gekko here, for those who are old enough to get that reference. Really, organizations in the learning business need to normalize revenue as mission enabling, not mission corrupting. And you know, that goes even for for-profit organizations. You know, presumably any type of learning business is going to have an element of being mission driven. And you have to have no margin, no mission is the way this often gets stated.
Right. So revenue is what allows learning businesses to continue. We've talked about revenue as the lifeblood of learning businesses in other contexts. And then, of course, revenue is also the avenue towards potentially scaling the impact. So again, if you know you're doing good work, if you're really trying to improve the individuals in whatever field, profession, or domain you serve, and you're doing good work and you're making them more effective in what they do, and you're having impact, then you want to have that revenue there to help you scale and help you take those good offerings out to even more people.
Right. So revenue is going to have that scale. It's going to help you produce better learning, help you to have that broader reach. If you're in an organization that does more than learning and maybe supporting other activities that are non-revenue or less revenue generating, say advocacy, if you're in an association.
Right. And, you know, I think of a conversation I had with Erin Presley of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, NRECA. She was on the podcast maybe about a year ago. And, you know, she said, I love to make money for my association. I mean, you know, she has really embraced this idea that to bring in money as the learning business is really good because it enables NRECA to do more, to deliver more on its mission. And so I think that that view is one that I think can be very healthy and perhaps empowering and freeing for organizations to embrace, that you want to make money because it allows you to do more good.
Right. And that can be a culture shift. I think that's something Erin talked about as well, as shifting the culture within her organization. We hear that frequently. We also, when we talk about revenue, we've already kind of alluded to this with the competition question. There's a lot of kind of wringing of hands and gnashing of teeth around the amount of free that is out there, that there's so many free offerings, and it can feel impossible to be a thriving revenue-generating learning business when people can just go to YouTube or any number of other places and get free learning resources.
And I think this is a place where you have to accept reality. I mean, there are free offerings. You're not going to change that. So just acknowledging that, yes, you are competing with free, but free is not necessarily the enemy. Free can be potentially leveraged in your own learning business, and that it can also help you potentially take a really hard look at what you're offering. And if something that you're offering is competing against free alternatives and it's not succeeding, then that tells you something. It basically means you need to either get rid of that offering or you need to think about how you can add value to it so that it will be more appealing and be valued by learners compared to the free offerings.
And we do have a tool for thinking through that, as we have, you know, so many tools for so many things. This one is the product value profile. We've actually had full episodes on that before, and we'll be sure to reference that in the show notes. But that enables you to take a methodical look at products in your portfolio and determine what is producing the value in those products that could be the reason that people are willing to pay for them. And if you're not seeing enough of those sort of value factors in a product, then you need to do some work on getting those value factors into the product.
Now, a key part of revenue is knowing your numbers, because that's going to help you make a lot of decisions. It's going to be a critical factor in many choices that you have to make. If you're grounded in an accurate view of what's happening revenue-wise with your learning business.
Yeah, and so this gets from, you know, kind of talking about revenue in the abstract to really getting down to concrete operational level discipline. And we see again and again, because we, you know, we consult with so many organizations and just have conversations with so many organizations, that many know their gross revenue. They all know their gross revenue, but they may not truly know their net revenue, really factoring in staff time and indirect cost that you really have to have visibility into if you want to know how products in your portfolio are performing.
Right. And then, of course, if you don't really know how they're performing, that can be very dangerous, because you might be continuing to invest in something that's actually losing you money, for example. And so you really need to get that clarity at the portfolio level of what's working and what's not. And so there's sort of the overall portfolio view, but we think it's actually beneficial too to get down at that product by product level, or certainly product line by product line level, understanding of, okay, which of these are actually making money for us, which of these are losing money, which of these are breaking even, because you need that clarity to then be able to better assess, okay, what does it potentially make sense to continue to offer, even though it's only breaking even, or even if it's potentially losing some money, but you need to have that clarity so that you can make informed decisions.
Right. I mean, because this isn't to say that everything in your portfolio needs to be profitable, needs to be generating a net positive margin. But to the extent that something isn't, you need to be intentional. You need to be conscious of it in the first place. You need to know that's the case. And then if you are going to subsidize it, you need to be doing that intentionally and really looking at the trade-offs that you're weighing in keeping that product in your portfolio. We've talked about this a lot in the context of the mission margin matrix, which is something that is in our executive briefing on conversations we've had with association CEOs. And just really, how do you weigh how something's performing at the mission level and how something's performing at the profitability level, the revenue level? And ideally, you want it to do both. You want any product to be both serving your mission and producing significant margin. But there may be situations where maybe it's not producing the revenue you want, but it is serving the mission very well, and you're going to consciously keep it in your portfolio for that reason.
And again, we'll make sure in the show notes to link to that executive briefing that has that draws conclusions from and shares insights from conversations that we had with a range of association CEOs about the role that education and learning play in their businesses, and that mission margin matrix is included in that executive briefing.
And I think tied up in this is just the idea that, you know, revenue is data. So negative revenue is not necessarily a failure. It's a signal. It's a piece of data, and you take that data and make it useful to have discussions and to make decisions about what you do with the products in your portfolio going forward.
Right. I think that view of revenue numbers as data and not inherently good or bad can be valuable, because I think there's a lot of pressure sometimes to hit, you know, specific targets. And yes, it would be great if you set and hit targets, but there's also no benefit in hiding from the fact if you're not hitting goals, and just being aware of those and then letting that really inform your decisions and trying to then dig into, why aren't we hitting our numbers? Is it about the product? Is it more about the promotion of the product? And just beginning to assess more specifically.
Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact. Now, as we considered this discussion about revenue, we realized that we probably could not have this discussion without also talking about pricing, since pricing is really a fundamental lever in the level of revenue that you're going to be able to generate from your portfolio.
And there are different approaches to setting prices. You can look at what competitors are charging and kind of peg your offerings to those prices. You can evaluate your cost, if you know what it really costs you to create a product, and then look at marking that up with a bit of margin on top of it. Now, of course, back to an earlier point, do you really understand your costs, and are you factoring in things like staff time and other sunk costs that might be actually part of what that product costs? Both of those are approaches, the competitor approach and then the cost plus. But I'd say that our favorite approach to setting prices is value-based pricing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you always have to be aware of what competitors are charging. You want to be making a margin over your cost, so you don't stop paying attention to those things. But we think in every instance, you really ought to be forming a very strong and evidence-based theory of what the value you are providing with any particular learning experience is and what that is worth to the learners who are receiving it. And if you're really helping your learners in a significant way with the experiences that you're delivering, if it's helping them get a valuable credential, if it's helping them prepare for a valuable career shift or job change, that should be captured to at least some extent in what you're charging for that product.
And once you embrace value-based pricing, there's also the need then to make sure that the products in your portfolio tell a logical story when it comes to pricing. And this is a place where we have another tool that can help with that. It's a tool called the Value Ramp. Again, we have an episode dedicated to that tool, so we'll link to that in the show notes. But it's really a simple curve, and the idea is that there is a relationship between price and value. So the higher the price, the more value you should be delivering. The higher the price, then the higher the value. So there's this very clear kind of connection there. Now, it's a ramp because we do also account for the idea of needing to create some momentum. And so there is a place even for free on the value ramp, or at least low cost for that matter.
Yeah, it's an important point. And the exercise you go through with the value ramp, and usually you'll do this not just as a single person, if you have any sort of team within your learning business, looking at that together and plotting out either your portfolio or maybe a business line within the or product line within the portfolio along that ramp. And as you were saying, Salisa, are you telling a logical story? Are the things that you're offering for free or very low cost, they're going to provide value, but they're going to provide lower value than the things that you're putting towards the middle or the top of your curve, where presumably you're delivering very, very high value. And hopefully you got something up at the top of that curve that is just really valued by your audience, but you've plotted things along that value ramp in a way that, even if you don't show it, because you'll rarely show this to your end users, but when they look at your catalog, when they look at your portfolio on your website or wherever, they get a sense of a logical value story and a logical pricing story to go along with it.
Another aspect of pricing is changing prices, specifically raising prices. That's usually the direction that you as a learning business want to be, moving prices upward rather than downwards. But for the most part, being intentional in periodically reviewing pricing and making sure that the pricing does still reflect the value that you're delivering. And then very often that's going to mean that you're going to need to be incrementally periodically raising prices rather than going a decade without any price increase and then potentially being in the position of needing to really radically increase the price to make it continue to make sense economically for you to offer that.
Yeah, at a very minimum, building in inflationary increase in your prices over time, certainly because your underlying costs are going to be increasing as a result of inflation. Oftentimes, your LMS and other services are going to have those costs built into them. You need them built into your pricing as well.
And then another aspect of pricing is, we talked about kind of, you have the individual products, then you have the portfolio as described, perhaps, along your value ramp, if you do that work to plot it out. So you have kind of the products and then the products within the context of the portfolio and that telling a logical story. But then there's also pricing for things like bundles or packages or subscriptions. So also thinking about not just as discrete units, but are there ways that you can create attractive groupings of your offerings that help incentivize deeper use of your products by those learners that you serve?
Yeah, and that points to really making use of what's typically called choice architecture around your pricing, around your products. Your different members of your audience, your different segments in your audience want to take advantage of, consume your products, your learning experiences in different ways at different times. So how are you making deliberate design choices and the display of those options out to your users in a way that makes sense to them, and then it's going to appeal to those different types of behaviors that you're seeing in your audience. Some people are going to want to buy the subscription. Some people are going to want to buy things that are bundled up, that make sense bundled together. Some are just going to want to be able to buy, one by one when they have the need.
And some other things to think about as you're thinking about pricing and how you present pricing, there are basically psychological levers that you can make use of There's the concept of reference pricing. And I know we've all seen this out in the real world. This is just where you see a higher original price and then you see that crossed out and then you've got the lower price, the sale price that is there instead. I mean, I know I'm a bit of a sucker of this at the grocery store, even. I'll kind of scan the shelves. And when I see the thing that's on sale, I'll at least tune into that. That can help to create a sense of urgency. It can also help to create this sense of, oh, I'm getting a bargain. I'm getting a deal here. Your standard early bird pricing for our conference is an example of this kind of reference pricing, because you're going to show them what the full cost for that conference is, but you're going to say, hey, you sign up now, early bird rate, and that's $200 cheaper, whatever it is.
Yeah, and that also relates to the concept of anchoring. Really, the first price a buyer sees is going to sort of set a mental benchmark for them. So, you know, higher anchor prices can make even moderately priced offerings feel cheaper than maybe they really are by comparison. We often talk about the concept of putting a magnet in your market, basically. And this goes back to the value ramp idea. If you've got something, you know, very high priced at the top of your value ramp in the world of learning, that might be, you know, highly consultative, customized, on-site, you add the features to it, learning experience that really are designed for that particular learner or maybe even an organization. Put that up there at a very high price tag. Well, suddenly your annual conference, which conferences are getting more and more expensive, maybe doesn't seem so expensive in comparison to that because you've got that anchor there.
Now, clearly, there are a lot of ins and outs to pricing. We've just touched on a few of some of the psychological plays and levers that you can make use of, but there's clearly a lot more out there. Asymmetric dominance effect, for example. There's a little, if you want to go Google that phrase, feel free to do that. But again, just want you to be thinking about, clearly pricing plays a role in revenue.
Yeah, I mean, we're just scratching the surface here. Pricing is a very, very rich area. We've written a lot about it. We've held webinars on it. We've done conference sessions on it. It factors into almost all of our consulting work. We're looking at how pricing is happening and maybe doing, you know, some surveying assessment, running tools like Van Westendorp price sensitivity meter to help clients get a real grip on pricing. And I think probably last word on it is we believe pricing is very strategic. It's a strategic lever to pull. So you've got to understand it. And back to our overarching topic here, it's obviously a huge driver of revenue. If you're able to raise price even just a little bit, if you've got a decent volume going with what you're offering, your gross revenue is going to go up and your net revenue is going to go up.
So we've been talking about numbers and making sure that you're clear on things like your net revenue and not just gross revenue, making sure that you understand which specific products are really contributing strongly to your bottom line and which perhaps are a bit of a drag on your bottom line. We've talked about pricing. All of those are numbers. And a lot of what you're doing in what we've been talking about is looking at what you've done and seeing where you are. So it's a backward facing. It's a historical look at what you've done. That's important because we do believe those numbers are essential to helping make informed decisions. But we don't think just looking back is enough.
Yeah, I mean, you want to look back really as sort of a launch pad for looking forward and go back to what we were saying earlier about discipline and really looking at how products or product lines are performing. Once you've got a good view of that, both what they're generating with revenue, but then you can also look at, if you're in the learning world, you're usually looking at enrollments and registrations, like how many people are you bringing to those products? And for example, an exercise to go through, we did this with a client recently, is to look at what are your enrollments on some of your key learning products, and then to really be thoughtful about what should they be? Like if we were sort of really performing at the level that we feel for good reason, you know, based on data, should be achievable in our market, what should we be hitting? And do a low end on that and do a high end on that and see how that compares to your current numbers. I mean, we did this with a client recently where the numbers they were hitting were pretty well below even the low end of what they thought they should be hitting. And they were a lot below the high end of what they should be hitting. And just out of that set of products, they were leaving anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000 a year on the table because they just hadn't really been focused on and disciplined about what those targets were and what levers they might then start pulling to actually hit those targets for each of those products.
I think that is an interesting example because it is a use of data, and it's a use of data to essentially form a hypothesis, yeah. right? That you're going out then to test. You need, we think we should be able to hit these numbers, and we think by pulling these levers, we will be able to hit these numbers. So that does then help you look forward. It helps you set some of those realistic targets, and then test out those hypotheses that you are developing.
Doing that, you know, can, for example, really clarify your discussions with marketing, assuming you've got a separate marketing team you're working with. It can also start to open up how you think about business model opportunities, possibilities, you know, what patterns you're seeing. If you're looking at those enrollment numbers, you're looking at what sells, but also who buys. And it may not just be individuals who are buying, it may be businesses are buying, or it may be the same individual is buying, you know, multiple products across your catalog, and you're seeing a lot of individuals doing that. So, you know, you might be pointing to a subscription model, for example. So really paying attention to the numbers can start to open that up for you.
Yeah. And when you're looking at who's buying, it could also be that, sure, it's 10 different people, but you know what? Six of them are all from the same organization,
right.
which is then going to, of course, perhaps point you towards an institutional level sale, a B2B type relationship where you're approaching that organization and saying, hey, a lot of your learners are coming to us anyway. Let's see if we can come up with a B2B approach here that makes sense for us and for you and for your learners.
And in doing that, I mean, you may find out, A, that, you know, that your marketing team really needs to be doing something different in terms of how it's positioning and communicating about your offerings, or you may need to be looking more seriously at direct sales roles. So, you know, somebody who can pick up the phone and call people, maybe an inside salesperson, or just more general business development. I mean, we're big fans of business development anyway, because business development is not just about selling. It's about building relationships, typically with employers and other sort of large buyers and influence in your marketplace. And as you're looking at where the revenue is coming from, you may see a clear path to, we really need somebody thinking much more actively and doing much more on a day-to-day business around business development.
Right. I mean, in our mind, business development really can serve that role of bringing together reach, revenue, and impact. I mean, I think often people think about revenue when it comes to business development, but as you were just saying, Jeff, I mean, it's about relationship building. It's about listening to the market. It's about doing those things that can help you then expand your reach and expand the impact that you're able to have. And so that role of business development, if you aren't in a well-heeled organization that is able to have a dedicated business development position, then it's going to need to be someone, the learning business leader, who plays that role essentially and is thinking about how the reach, revenue, and impact fit together, thinking about those relationships, thinking about how are we listening to the market and how are we hearing and translating what we're hearing into product ideas that will deliver value.
Yeah, and this isn't just a nice idea on our part. I mean, we consistently see some of the most successful learning businesses we work with doing this, where the learning business leaders, they may have a business development person on their team or have access to one through their organization, but they are also very focused on business development. We mentioned Erin Presley earlier. She does this. This is something she thinks about. David Upben at Mortgage Bankers Association, who's been on, you know, multiple, you know, events and spoken to the leading learning audience many times, he definitely does this in his role at the Mortgage Bankers Association. Revenue is deeply connected to a learning business's reach and impact. Clarity on net revenue on a product-by-product basis can provide essential data to help inform decisions about what to continue to offer, what to retire, and what to revamp.
Revenue numbers can also serve as a proxy for value perception. Your top performers are likely offerings that are valued by the market and are likely the products that will have the most impact.
Top revenue performers are also likely to be the ones where you're reaching a large swath of your audience.
So learning businesses need to think and periodically rethink about how they price and prioritize offerings.
And they should consider investing more intentionally in the relationships and business development work that help connect learning to real needs in the market.
If this conversation sparked ideas or raised questions, we hope you'll keep exploring them and discuss them with your team.
You can find show notes and a transcript and related resources at leadinglearning.com/episode 473.
And if you find the Leading Learning podcast valuable, please consider sharing this episode with a colleague or coworker who's wrestling with revenue challenges.
Thanks again for listening, and see you next time on the Leading Learning podcast.